street homeless. So, no, they're perhaps probably not sleeping in boxes. The idea of the event is that we're giving up our comforts of home for a night.
Right.
And it's closely tied to the cause. It is it's unique. There's nothing else like it in Hunterdon County. It's fairly quick. You know, it starts at 6 o'clock on Saturday the 30th, and by 8 o'clock Sunday morning, the boxes are flattened and everyone is gone. It's amazing, and it's really, really fun. Mm. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's an outdoor movie. We always tell the teenagers, there's food. Provide
there
food. They love food. And, you know, the last thing I wanted to mention is that I've organized a lot of fundraisers over many, many years for other various organizations. The cost.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
To ensure that President Trump's vision for a health care system in this country that works for every American will become a reality.
Vice President Mike Pence heaping praise on Tom Price, the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, saying he's the man to bring Trump's visions for reforming Obamacare to reality. President Trump is meeting today with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Earlier today, through a translator, Abe said no one in Japan complains about the relationship between America and Japan when it comes to jobs.
Nobody in Japan complains that his or her job has been taken away by the Americans because the Japanese have gained in business as well. Truly a win-win relationship.
Former Virginia National Guard soldier facing 11 years in prison for conspiring with ISIS. A federal judge in Alexandria sentenced Mohammed Jalloh this morning. USA Radio News.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Jen London with The Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to
snow has now been plowed, roads are clear, and what could be happening this weekend? Well, there's some isolated snow showers that may be predicted, only about a 20% chance, and then again, a slight chance of snow or sleet, low of about 25 degrees. Now that's tonight. I'm just trying to pull down more information about that, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to. So, if it does snow, that's a slight chance before 3 a.m. And then perhaps showers and sleet between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. And then again, a slight chance of snow showers after 4 a.m. Should not really be a problem. Tomorrow mostly cloudy, near 35 degrees, near 45 degrees tomorrow. Then, so there should be some fairly substantial melting. And then by tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, and then again, a chance of rain and sleet. That's not good. Low of about 35 degrees. So if it's below freezing, it'll be snow, maybe, in some areas, but unfortunately, there is that chance of rain and sleet after 1 a.m. So watch out on Sunday morning, because it could really be problem. There could be some black ice. Now, on Sunday, we have a 70% chance of rain. Not good. High of about 43 degrees. So that's going to be the problem. And watch out for flooding, because if we have much rain, it could be a real problem for flooding in some areas. Again, Sunday night, there's an 80% chance. So it's fairly likely that we'll have rain, and then a possible mixture of rain and snow when it gets colder, because it could get down to around 33 degrees. Monday, mostly sunny, breezy, high of 41, and by Tuesday should also be mostly sunny. So the weather this weekend is iffy for the weekend, but then it should be fairly nice next week. So we'll be right back after I tell you who a couple of our sponsors are, and we'll be talking about legal news.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com. Unanimously, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit left
in place a ruling blocking President Trump's executive order suspending immigration from seven predominantly Muslim countries. So at this point, that in fact, and they did it based on constitutional grounds, and in fact that's why they upheld it. I guess another thing that is coming up in the news, and it is really a concern, excuse me, and it's coming up again in New Jersey, but when parents divorce, they're faced with creating not only a new family structure, but that involves deciding how much time each parent will have with their children and each parent's role in future decisions regarding the well-being of their children. And I think there's a lot of misperceptions. One of the big concerns, of course, is if one parent is named the parent of primary residence, how easy it is now for that parent to be able to move the children out of the state of New Jersey, even though the other parent has joint legal custody and spends a substantial amount of time with the children and has an ongoing relationship that will substantially change if the parent is allowed, if one parent, the parent of primary residence, is allowed to move. There is pending now a statute that would change the Supreme Court decision, that is the decision that rules now and trial judges follow with the case, the Supreme Court case of Bowers versus Lewis. And the focus now is on the parent of primary residence who wants to move. And the bar is fairly low as far as prohibiting such a move. So there is a statute pending that would specifically change the Bowers versus Lewis analysis and require the showing to be of best interest of the child, which is going to be more difficult than the current standard. So we'll see how that goes, and of course, faced with basically losing your children if the other parent wants to move to another state is very difficult. And when I say losing your children, I don't mean that literally, because obviously the courts try to put into place some reasonable parenting time and contact. But in reality, I think anyone who has lived a distance from their children or even grandchildren know how difficult this is. Now, on the other hand, it has to be balanced with the reasons. If a parent of primary residence has a job and is transferred and will not be able to find anything close to comparable employment in New Jersey, you know, certainly that's a factor, and that may weigh against some of the other detriments. But when often these cases come up when someone has a job transfer or wants to marry someone in another state. And of course, there's always the question about what was in the agreement and whether or not there's any prohibitions in the agreement. But in any event, those are things that are certainly in the news and will be followed up on later. Now, of course, most of us who are in the legal field, even though we don't do criminal work, have been very concerned about this new bail reform bill and the rules. And now the state appellate court ruled on Wednesday about discovery, and that prosecutors must provide defendants with extensive discovery if they are seeking to have those defendants held without bail before trial under the new reform system. And so this, the case that I'm talking about is State versus Robinson, and it was decided on Wednesday, and the opinion addresses the scope of the discovery which the state must provide prior to a pre-trial detention hearing held under the Bail Reform Act. Now, under this new bail reform act, there must be a pretrial detention hearing. And so in this case, the court, the appellate division, construes the rule. There is a rule which requires a prosecutor to produce, and this is a quote, all statements or reports in its possession relating to the pretrial detention application. Now, the court in the Robinson case rejected the state's argument that its discovery obligation is limited to producing the probable cause affidavit. So in other words, there has to be probable cause, but that's what the prosecutor wanted to be limited to producing that at the preliminary law enforcement, and the preliminary law enforcement information report. Now, the rule obligates the prosecutor to provide a defendant with those materials in the state's possession that relate to the facts on which the state bases its pretrial detention application. And the court found that in this case, the probable cause affidavit relied on an eyewitness identification of the defendant. And the opinion affirms the trial court's order requiring the prosecutor to provide the defendant with the two eyewitness statements, photo arrays, a surveillance video, and the initial police reports, so that the defendant was given, had to be given these items because they were, of course, in the prosecutor's file. Now, there's a lot of, well, there's some controversy over the Bail Reform Act, but one of the things that we must remember is that many defendants in the past have sat in jail for extensive periods of time because they weren't able to afford bail or even afford the to have a bail bondsman post bail because they couldn't afford the 10%. So that, very often it was a 10% bail. They couldn't afford that, or they couldn't afford the bail bondsman's the cost of the bond. And so there's many defendants who then are later not convicted can spend months and sometimes even more than months in jail. And that's one of the reasons why we have this speedy trial act and rules, so that a defendant does not spend months in jail. And of course, we won't even talk about the defendants who are convicted, especially based on eyewitness testimony that later, and often many years later, are proven innocent because of the advances in DNA testing. So anyway, that was, of course, an appellate division case reported this week. There was another case, Keene Federation of Teachers versus Morrell, and this is an appellate division case. And this case, it was an action in lieu of prerogative writs. The plaintiffs alleged that the Board of Trustees of Keene University violated the open meetings, actually the Open Public Meetings Act, by delaying 94 days and then 58 days before releasing the minutes of two board meetings. On the cross motions for summary judgment, the trial court found that the board violated the promptly available standard under the statute, and that's the statute that governs Open Public Meetings Act. And so the appellate division affirmed, meaning they agreed with the trial judge. And the trial court issued a permanent injunction directing the university to release the board minutes within 45 days of each future meeting. And that, the trial judge said, would conform to the Open Public Meetings Act. And however, the appellate division vacated the injunction but orders the board to adopt a meeting schedule for the academic year 18, which will enable it to make its meetings, its meeting minutes available to the public within 30 to 45 days, absent extraordinary circumstances. And the in another case, the that was reported back in 1977, the court held public bodies were required to send affected employees reasonable advance notice to enable them to make the decision on whether they desire a public discussion and to prepare and present an appropriate request in writing with respect to these meetings, so that there will be someone can't meet these if they have to have an open meeting, a public meeting. They can't just not report on it for 4, 5, 6 months. So there, the there was another case with respect to whether or not a father of two students who attended public schools could sue a Board of Education attorney who told a newspaper about the child welfare investigation into the father, but failed to disclose that the investigation was resolved in the father's favor. So most of us would say, yes, you can sue someone under the protection that the Board of Education attorney had. The father could not sue the Board of Education attorney. I have more information on that case. I don't think I do at this point, but it means that the Board of Education attorney erroneously reported, or certainly made it appear as if there was a child welfare investigation into the father, but then failed to disclose that the investigation resolved itself in the father's favor. So I think most of us would be very upset if, in fact, something like this was reported to the newspapers without then being the full story, I guess we should say. Because anybody can accuse anyone else, and it's not unusual, certainly with the department and what we used to call DIFAS, and now Division of Child Protection. They receive many, many unfounded claims, and of course they have to investigate if there's any basis at all. And many of those are closed and resolved in the because the alleged, there's nothing to substantiate whatever the alleged allegations were. Now, apparently a hospital that fails to notify regulators when it makes a treatment error does not lose its right to keep an internal report about the incident confidential. This, again, was an appellate court ruling that even though the hospital didn't notify the regulators, they can still keep it quiet. Sometimes we have to read the cases to understand why some of these things happen. Now, there was an appeal on criminal law, the IMO registrant AD et al., and this was a Supreme Court case, and the appeal concerned applications to terminate the sex offenders' registration law obligations. And the court determined whether or not the term offense, as used in the statute, means a crime of disorderly persons offense or petty disorderly persons offense. Unless a particular subsection in the code is intended to apply to less than all three, the definition given in general definitional subsection of the New Jersey Code of Criminal Justice, or a, quote, sex offense, end quote, as defined in the registration law. They said that in this case, the court determines what the offense meant, and they took and affirmed the appellate court's decision on that. Again, if anyone is concerned about that, they should look up the case IMO Registrant AD et al. And that was decided on this past week by the appellate division. And let me give a shout out to a few of our sponsors, or I guess I should say let them give a shout out. And then we'll be back with more on the law.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Under President Trump that may affect their work. citizenship, and he's to become a citizen next month. Clearly a very productive person, very skilled, and someone that anybody should want in the United States and want him to become a citizen. And all of these people are now very, very concerned that somehow things will be delayed, and that all of the years that they've actually been what we would call good citizens, even though they're not citizens, somehow they still might not be able to become U.S. citizens. And that's terribly unfortunate, and let's hope that these things don't happen. Apparently, there are a couple of the judges who were recommended for tenure, even though they were under fire because of the treaty of limits during their initial 7-year terms. I mean, that's frankly surprising. I think the judges in general just bend over backwards to treat litigants, litigants and attorneys well. And of course, we can all have a bad day. But, you know, I can go back and certainly there were some judges that did not treat people well. And that's always a concern. I mean, if the judge is not judicial, they should not be on the bench. And there are many excellent attorneys who would be the first to admit that they don't have the temperament and the patience. And it really does take good temperament and patience very often. I mean, sometimes the judges are both in written and in court are really abused. I'm working on an appeal right now where I think the other side is really unfairly attacking the judge and claiming the judge's prejudice and bias. Et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, if anyone saw the entire record of this case, that's so far from the truth. So sometimes people, you know, do more than shade the truth. But in fact, the case I'm thinking of now, I mean, the litigant was extremely nasty in the courtroom to the first judge who was assigned, and then when the case was reassigned because the first judge was transferred, was extremely nasty to the second judge. But anyway, and was extremely nasty to her own attorney when any time that the attorney was trying to be reasonable and give reasonable advice. But in any event, that those things happened. So there was an appeal in a case. This was a was an employment contract, and the plaintiff conceded a jury waiver provision in his employment contract applied to his breach of contract claim against his employer. But he argued that it did not apply to his claim that the defendant violated the Conscientious Employee Protection Act, which is CEPA. And again, all of these acts, there is a specific statute. In this case, the Conscientious Employee Protection Act is found in NJSA 34:19-14. So the provision in the employment contract stated the parties, and this is a quote, irrevocably waive any rights to trial by jury in any suit, action, or proceeding under proceeding in connection with or to enforce this agreement. Now, there was no reference to statutorily conferred rights or causes of action arising from plaintiff's employment. And as a result, the appellate division concluded that the jury waiver provision failed to clearly and unambiguously explain the right to a jury trial was waived as to any Conscientious Employee Protection $2 million and remanded to the trial court to determine what portion of the award is warranted for the defense against the breach of contract claims. So in this case, the fees were for, obviously the fees were for the entire case, and in this, it was only what portion was warranted for the defense of the appeal against the breach of contract claims. So that case, again, would be rather specific, but it is a case that was reported and it was employment, but it was important that in that case, the employer, who obviously put together the contract, the employment contract, wasn't specific, and so that this, in this case, the court, and I think correctly, said that, since there was no reference to statutorily conferred rights or causes of action, therefore the jury waiver provision fails, and, or in this case, failed to clearly and unambiguously explain the right to a jury trial was waived, even though this was a conscientious employee protection act case. So that shows you, and shows all of us, that contracts need to be very specific and all-inclusive, meaning that the court in this case did not say that they would not enforce claim if an, I'm sorry, not enforce a contract, an employment contract, that prohibited a jury trial, even when there was the right arose out of the statutory statutes and statutory rights. Well, the New Jersey did court, the appeals court ruled that a plaintiff who was wrongly denied counsel fees after winning a dispute over an ordinance, they said the fact that the plaintiff had deep pockets was not an excuse to deny fees. I'm trying to remember what case that was. So that, so deep pockets are not a reason. And that case was, again, that was decided on the 6th of February. Well, there's been a change to the child support statute, and that we've talked about and we'll talk about again. Just trying to see what else was significant in this past week. I believe I may have mentioned that a judge is moving ahead with a probable cause inquiry in that citizen's complaint. I think I mentioned that last week. And that, of course, was significant. So there's a case, not employment litigation, but not really, wasn't reported. It was not a reported case, but the this was a civil service commission. It was a request by the Division of Human Services for an appointment waiver from a certification for programs. It denied the man's request for the appointment. And they provisionally appointed someone else to the title. And following an examination, Mr. Tisch was the number one veterans preference applicant. And after being interviewed, he received an email inquiring if he was interested in the position. He said he was interested, and then what they did is the Division of Human Services transferred the person who had been given the appointment to a non-competitive title of Information Technology Specialist. And shortly thereafter, the other person requested the Civil Service Commission to approve its request for an appointment waiver respecting the certifying list, citing fiscal constraints and stating that no one was at the time serving provisionally in the subject title. So that Tisch appealed, the commission granted the other person's request for a waiver of appointment because of an alleged fiscal constraint. Now, I'm sorry, let me go back. The other person was, in this case, DHS, the Division of Human Services. Sorry, I'm really giving you wrong information. So what happened is the Division of Human Services provisionally appointed another person to the title. However, following an examination, Mr. Tisch, and this is in the matter of Tisch, T-I-S-C-H, Tisch was the number one veterans preference applicant. Now, veterans do have preference, and this certainly makes it easier for veterans because there's a veterans preference on any of these exams. So, after being interviewed, Tisch, as I said, received an email inquiring if he was still interested in the position. He said he was interested. Now, what happened then is the Division of Human Services transferred the other person to a non-competitive title of Information Technology Specialist. And then shortly thereafter, the Division of Human Services requested the Civil Service Commission to approve its request for an appointment waiver respecting the certified list, citing fiscal constraints and stating that no one was at that time serving provisionally in the subject title. Now that's when Tisch appealed, and the commission granted the Department of Human Services request for a waiver of appointment because of an alleged fiscal constraint. However, appellate division held that the record was devoid of any evidence as to the alleged fiscal constraint. So in other words, they're saying, wait a minute, if you say there's fiscal constraint, you have to provide some information because there was no evidence to support that. And then further, the Department of Human Services fiscal condition provided no justification for a waiver of appointment to a position occupied by a provisional as well as over the 1 year period allowed by law. So in other words, their fiscal condition was not justification for a waiver of an appointment to a position occupied by a provisional worker for over a year. And that's apparently that's the law, that these provisional workers can work up until 1 year as provisionals. And then so that the fiscal condition provided no justification for them to do that, to the preclusion of those eligible candidates who legitimately qualified for the position through competitive examination. So they went on to say the undeveloped record prevents any determination as to whether the Department of Human Services had good cause, such as fiscal constraint, to justify. justify its request for an appointment waiver, and also whether its actions were undertaken as part of an effort to sidestep the civil service system. Therefore, the appellate division, the panel in this case, reversed the commission's grant of a waiver for the position of program support specialist one and remanded for hearing. Now, you know, some people would say it should not just be the test, but certainly the tests, if they're valid and reliable tests, testing the skills of the person who is in fact looking for the appointment, that's justified. I mean, it means that there's not going to be the old cronyism where somebody was appointed just because they were the friend. So that it's an important part of the merit system. It's an important part to show that there's no cronyism. And of course, there's also, however, there are people, certain people are in fact have an easier time. There used to be many complaints that women did not get positions because it was unusual for a woman to be a veteran. Well, today it's not as unusual for a woman to be a veteran. So some of the criticisms might fall on deaf ears, because anyone who was in fact a veteran would get the same veterans. So they do have a benefit. They do have an edge up. But anyone would get that, whether it's someone who is woman or man or whatever ethnic background. So there was an unpublished case. This is part of a juvenile. And in this case, the juvenile appealed from an adjudication of delinquency for conduct that, if committed by an adult, would have constituted two counts of third-degree aggravated assault. A count of third-degree aggravated assault by attempt to cause significant bodily injury, and a count of second-degree aggravated assault involving serious bodily injury, all of which were committed upon two school security officers. Now, what happened in this case is A.H., the juvenile, was sent to the school nurse because there was suspicion he was under the influence. And after his mother was called to pick him up, the two security officers attempted to prevent him from leaving the school when he assaulted both of them. So they tried to prevent him from leaving school, he assaulted both of them. And he testified as to his recollection of the incident, denying that he tried to leave the school and that the security officers assaulted him while forcing him to sit in a chair while he was waiting for his mother. So there were two stories. Not unusual. He said he was sitting in a chair waiting for his mother. The security guard said they were attempting to prevent him from leaving the school. Now, on appeal, adjudicated delinquency for that conduct. Now, so he was adjudicated delinquent based on that conduct. Now, what happened is he appealed, and he argued at that time on the appeal that the adjudication of delinquency lacked sufficient support in the record. Now, while the court found that the first three counts were supported by the record, the court ruled that the trial court's adjudication on the charge of a second-degree aggravated assault involving serious bodily injury was incomplete and its legal conclusions unclear. So the court also found that trial court failed to make those explicit findings as to his state of mind with respect to the second. conscious object to cause security officers to suffer serious bodily injury. And the court found that the trial court conflated elements of knowing and reckless causation. And the court finally held that the trial court did not consider whether the security officer's knee infection and subsequent loss of function were so so they remanded the case for further, additional findings, which is not unusual. This happens all the time with the appellate division. They almost never, at least in family law cases, almost never made a decision. Either they uphold, they'll make a decision. But unless they uphold what the trial judge did, they will. That's what they can do, or otherwise they can. In fact, if there's a remand, the trial court then can ask for additional discovery or ask for any other things that the trial court feels it needs. Okay. Let's get a little more of a break for me and for our sponsors. But I'll be right back after we have a couple more sponsors so we can get the program finished on time today.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Statute that requires that type of reporting. So in reverse is solely on compliance with statutory and regulatory mandates governing formation of a patient safety plan and related procedural requirements. Now, furthermore, there was insufficient evidence of causation to support the trial court's findings of a SPAE, which means a serious preventable adverse event. So specifically missing was the expert evidence that any serious adverse event occurred because of an error or other system failure. So that's the reason that, that case was held. And or I should say the findings made that way. And we'll be kind of the end of the program, and we'll be back with the sports guys right after this short break. And I'm really pleased we'll be talking not only football today, but I think we're going to be talking some baseball since our guest today is John Macy. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Safety is a primary reason, one of the reasons I'm standing here today, is the security of our country. The voters felt that I would give it the best security.
President Trump, during a press conference with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, talking about security of America and saying something is coming next week.
So we'll be doing something very rapidly having to do with additional security for our country. You'll be seeing that sometime next week. In addition, we will continue to go through the court process, and ultimately, I have no doubt that we'll win that particular case.
West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin says a meeting with President Trump went well as they discussed not only Supreme Court justice, but also many other issues. He said it was positive, unlike a lot of Washington discussion.
No one got into name-calling, or no one got into why he said, she said. It wasn't that, and you'd be surprised. Not only did we talk about the nominee for Supreme Court, we talked about many, many subjects.
USA Radio News.
My number two does not look like a number two. I don't know what to call it. Is there a number three?
Table for four, please. Anything close to the restroom.
A middle seat with these stomach problems? That's my fear of flying.
Sound like you? If it does, you could be one of the many people with a digestive condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. Even if you don't know what EPI is, you might know the symptoms. Frequent diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain. If you have even just one of these symptoms, you could still have EPI, because not everybody experiences EPI the same way, which is why it's so important to open up to your doctor about all your symptoms. And the good news is, EPI is manageable, so don't keep a lid on it. Go to identifyepi.com, complete the symptom checker, and use it to have a conversation with your doctor. Don't keep a lid on it. Visit identifyepi.com. Brought to you by AbbVie.
Correspondent Mark Mayfield is reporting that one of the candidates for Solicitor General is withdrawing his name.
An attorney who is believed to be on President Trump's shortlist for Solicitor General is pulling his name from consideration. Chuck Cooper issued a statement yesterday saying he's deeply honored, but he's asked newly confirmed Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Trump to discontinue any further consideration. The